It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Nevada has its share of notable political figures from both sides of the aisle and throughout the decades. One such figure is former Senator Richard H. Bryan, who began his career in public service as a deputy district attorney in Clark County, then became the first county public defender in state history. He served in the Nevada legislature in both the Assembly and the Senate. He was elected attorney general, then Nevada governor, and then Bryan was elected to the U.S. Senate in 1988, re-elected in 1994, and he served on the committees on commerce, banking, taxation, and intelligence, and chaired the Ethics Committee. Well, he's now written, along with noted author John L. Smith, My Life in Nevada Politics, The Memoirs of Senator Richard H. Bryan. It's published by the University of Nevada Press, and it is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about John L. Smith, go to johnlsmithwriter.com and follow him on LinkedIn and X. And John, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ira, it's great to see you. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely. You are one of the most prolific writers I know, whether in-state or out-of-state, and you just keep going. And your latest book, of course, as I mentioned, is the Memoirs of Richard H. Bryan. How did you get involved in the project?
You know, it was interesting. I was approached by the senator to work with him on his memoir. And it was a challenge from the start, because we both had lives going in various directions. And but he carved out time, and I did as well. And, you know, it was a learning experience. I know he has said it was a learning experience for him to complete a book project, which is really hard.
Absolutely.
I always say it, this is a marathon. Whether the book is short or large, it's still a marathon. But for me, the learning experience was enormous. I mean, it was like a master's class or a graduate class in politics, in real retail politics from a master. And that was the joy of the book. The book was a marathon, but, but it was one that I was able to learn something along the way other than just sweat it out.
Did you find that you had to do additional research in addition to your meetings with Senator Bryan, such as the UNLV Special Collections or other resources? Or did you get enough from just his memory? Because he has amazing memory. And as you mentioned in your book, he knows so many people in the state and knows their background and their family, et cetera.
He has a remarkable memory, really. It's kind of one of those one in a million characters who can meet someone and remember them, not just their face, but their name, their family members, backgrounds, you know, the broken leg you had when you fell off the tractor years earlier. How's that healing? I mean, that kind of stuff Dick Bryan remembers. But beyond that, there was a lot of research to do. Some of the research was for me, right? I needed to be up to speed with issues that had not been in the public light and certainly weren't in my own learning curriculum in college. That was one kind of research. There was another kind of research, and that was the voluminous work over this arc of 50 plus years of public service. There was so much there that the characters and anecdotes he remembered really well. But a lot of times the issues, hey, you know, when that file's closed, you move on to the next case. And so for that, we had to reopen those files and take another look and do a lot of reading and a lot of back and forth. And again, it was a long process, but one that was rewarding. And I think he thought it was rewarding as well.
Sure. Was he surprised when you did your own research and came across, for example, as you mentioned, an issue that he may have forgotten about or that he didn't remember exactly, and you brought it up to him in a discussion? And was he surprised at the level of research you were doing outside of your conversations with him?
I think at the outset, perhaps he was, but, you know, this was one of those real team efforts. And I think he realized that once we got the ball rolling, I was very serious about having it be the best it could be. And he was as well. So, you know, after the initial kind of what we would call a feeling out phase of writing and working together in collaboration, I really believe that that he came to kind of and expect it. And, you know, we went through the stacks and through transcripts of legislative committee hearings and things like that from literally from the 60s and forward through the gubernatorial years. And then, of course, the Senate. Which was another a whole book in itself, really. We covered it, with its measure, but there was a lot to a lot of ground to cover, and he did so with an amazing amount of effort and skill.
And this is a little bit in the weeds, but in your meetings with him, were they in person most of the time, or by phone, or by Zoom, or a mix of all of them?
Imagine the project. It started with masks on. When we first started to meet and talk about it,
right.
And in those days, of course, we were wearing masks in Zoom meetings, we didn't know. We started at that time. This is, essentially 2021, and began to work together in the same room, side by side, going over copy and documents and whatnot. And then we worked over the phone, of course. We did not do Zooms, but we worked a lot over the phone and an awful lot over email and text. At a point, there was a large manuscript to work on, and the first draft came and it was pretty good. Then there was a second draft, and beyond that, so we really worked and worked and worked until he had it the way he wanted it. His right. voice, I know those who know him or those who will meet him only casually, when they open that book, they're going to hear his voice. And that's what I wanted. That's what he wanted. And he did a great job with it.
And I think also the way the book is written, it says it's not as told to. It's you two are right. co-authors. And I think that's an important distinction. When you started the project, were there any surprises in the initial stages of writing about Senator Bryan, things that you didn't know about him that you thought you did, and all of a sudden something pops up and you add that to the list of things to write about?
Yeah, no question. His early life is a kind of a bit of an odyssey of or a gamble, if you will, back to the early Las Vegas of the 40s and 50s. And so you have this era where Las Vegas is literally a town of 8,000. In 1940, I think, the county has 16,000 people in it. Reno is the big city in the state with all the political clout. And so that's the place he grew up in. And of course, it changed dramatically. And so there was a realistic kind of feel to what he experienced, because of course I wasn't there in 1940 again, something I really appreciate. I can go forward when I write on these kinds of issues in the future with a better understanding of what the town was really like. But that's just a small part of it. I mean, we all think that that we can run a railroad because we've ridden on a train. And so the legislative years were fascinating to me, and how much the two sides of the coin of the aisle, how much they got along. I mean, they weren't at each other's throats. The caucuses, the Republican caucus and the Democratic caucus, they were separate, but there was plenty of communication. There was very little vitriol, especially in the state Senate. It was considered, impolite to raise your voice too much in those early years. And so you have these occasional blow-ups, but for the most part, people got along fairly well, even though they completely disagreed on the issues. And that was just one of those lessons. There are many themes that run through the book. This is not just a person, so people know. This isn't just a person winging some memories. There are themes in this book. And one of those themes is the arc of political discourse in our country through the eyes of an expert. and from childhood all the way through to the end of his career, Dick Bryan was a guy who saw that. And he saw the political discourse change dramatically when Newt Gingrich rose to power in the House for the Republicans, the Contract with America era, where, you know, the conversation ceased with the other side. And so you have these kind of tipping points that took place. And Dick Bryan was there, front row. And he tells that story with a measured voice. And it's a reminder. It should hurt people's hearts a little bit that we're not that country anymore. And that was one of the themes of the book. And it's one of those that I'm very proud of. And there are others as well that I'm happy to talk about.
Sure. He was and always is a civil guy. And I think he's perceived that way by most people. I don't think I've ever met anybody that had a bad word to say about Senator Bryan. And why do you think he waited till now to get together with you to write the memoir? He has been retired from the Senate for several years. I think going back to, you would know better than me in terms of the date.
Yeah, two decades.
Yeah, two decades ago. So he had all that time to really sit down and write. Why do you think now he decided he wanted to put together with you the memoirs and the themes that he wanted to talk about?
Well, I think partly as a sense of legacy. In future years, I am sure that academics will approach Richard Bryan's life and policy for another biography, perhaps something weightier and than this one. But also Senator's good friend Larry Struve, a longtime Nevada player inside state government policy wise. Larry Struve wrote a book on Richard Bryan's policies and how he changed kind of the course of Nevada from ethics to financial disclosure to gaming control evolution, you name it. And he was there and addressed those issues, not always successfully, but he had the right themes. But I think for him, Bryan was still really active. When he entered retirement from the Senate, he basically, after a vacation, he went right to work as an attorney. And he's been associated closely with the fight against Yucca Mountain, the nuclear repository project. And he continues that to today. It's 2025. He still heads the Commission on Nuclear Projects. So he's past 85 now. So we're talking about a guy who is in the game, loves the game. At the front of the book, I think it'll be instructive for readers to see that famous quote from Theodore Roosevelt about it's not the critic who counts, it's the man in the arena. You know, the person in the arena taking the blows, fighting the fights, and all of that. And I think he lived by that. But as you said earlier, Ira, this is a for someone who's been to the heights of politics, he's a pretty humble guy.
He is.
So I think that's a long way of explaining why it took him a while to get to it.
He probably was encouraged by friends and colleagues as well to do that, I would think.
Absolutely. I think, you can't discount the influences of guys like Bob Stoldall, Michael Green. So many people in his life were encouraging him to, because in conversation, he's such a great storyteller. Mm-hmm. Right? When he waxes nostalgic about, his first trip to the barber by himself, it's pretty funny. It might not lead an HBO series and it's quaint, but right, compared to some of the raunch that's out there, but he's got a great sense of humor, and it's on display in several places. He's self-deprecating, so he's not poking fun at all the other foibles of some of his, colleagues and coworkers. So I think there's that element to it. And people will hopefully they'll take time to read it and appreciate that this kind of person comes along maybe once in a lifetime, and in modern politics may not come again.
And you mentioned earlier on, you referenced the retail politics of Senator Bryan. One thing that always amazed me when I had him on my old show was he actually loved going to these rubber chicken lunches and dinners. And
can you believe it?
I was shocked. I said,
"You can boy, I mean, you know, one a year is a lot. One a year is like a trip to the dentist for a molar drill, you know." But he liked it. He was a natural. This is a guy, and he tells this story early in the book. This is a guy who would campaign at a bowling alley during the league play in between roles. When someone went back to their seat, he would say, "Hi, I'm Dick Bryan, running for office. Here's what I'm doing." And he would go from lane to lane to lane. Nobody does that. He did it, but you know, people appreciated it. They saw that someone was out there who really wanted the dang job, you know, and most of the time he won, not all the time, but most of the time he won. So, you know, it's an amazing thing. Yeah. And yeah. If I may, I get carried away with the subject.
No, it's great. Go ahead.
He's running for re-election as governor. He runs in Nevada, which, as we know, has a blue section, a smaller blue section in the north, and a lot of red. He wins every county in the state. Now, that's popularity.
Yeah.
I don't know. I imagine perhaps Michael Callahan did that. But no one else that I can think of in the modern era carried every county in Nevada.
Yeah.
And Brian did that. So, I mean, this is a guy who's out there on the stump, literally from Gerlach at a little bar in Gerlach, all the way down to Searchlight, where his friend Harry Reid was born. I mean, there's a lot there.
Do you think that the state has properly recognized him? Because I think there should be more, I don't know whether it's monuments or places they honor him. He has an elementary school named after him, and I know there's dedication up north to him as well. But given the breadth of his career and public service to Nevada, don't you think there should be some more recognition? And you may be a prejudiced observer of this, but it just seems to me, looking at it, that he doesn't get as much recognition. And again, he's low key, so he's not seeking it. But it would seem to me that people around him, or the general public or others, would want to recognize him in a lot of different ways.
Well, you know, you're right. I am biased, and I do. If you're going to put names on things, of people, all of whom have feet of clay, and eventually the future generations may not like the choice and all of that. I think that certainly he would deserve his share of that. However, you're right. You know, in those situations, it's kind of the squeaky wheel effect. And I don't know that he's that kind of person.
I don't think he is, but as you mentioned, Michael Green and Bob Stodall and others that are listeners and viewers may not know the names of, but there are plenty of people who are influential in a lot of areas in the state that could come together and perhaps work something out for some other or an additional dedication to him.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. And those are certainly the people who would do it. They would go to the ramparts for him. But I'm not sure whether that's high on his list at this point in his life. It would be appreciated, you know, if someone endowed a chair or did something like that. That would be great, and it would be meaningful. You know, people would benefit. That's kind of the guy's story. You know, there are a lot of accomplishments that are possible if you work long enough. What he says is, and it's a line that others have said, but he said, you know, it's never ceased to amaze me how much can be accomplished if no one's standing around to take the credit.
Yes, correct.
And that's kind of his style. Right. So, anyway.
Makes sense. You mentioned going to the ramparts for him. I would think if they had a dinner, they'd go to the rampart for him, and at least in Las Vegas. That's my attempted humor. I have to occasionally throw that in. I thank you. I wanted to.
You're all.
I wanted to do a slight aside because you are the co-author, but you have written so many books, and I want our viewers and listeners, new ones particularly, and those listening and watching from out of the state, to go to your website, because you have written, I've lost count of how many books you've written, and I know we've had discussions over the years about your prolific writing ability. It's johnlsmithwriter.com. If you just go there, you'll see there's books on Oscar Goodman. Do you remember how many books you've written off the top of your head?
It's more than 20.
Amazing.
But I mean, it's, you know, some of those are brief and some of those are long. I've written, you know, books that don't drop them on your foot. And and then I've written I have a series of books for young readers on historical characters in Nevada. Those are fairly brief, about 12,000 words each. And anyway, you know, it's just, yeah, I keep busy.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that in as an aside. I wanted people.
My T-shirt. I hope it's not on my tombstone, but my T-shirt. My T-shirt should say "Stop me before I write again."
No, because you're very busy writing for The Independent and other places as well. So you're very active, just as Senator Bryan's very active. You talked about his service to the community, to the state, really, not just to the community. We, those of us who live in Las Vegas, think of Las Vegas. Those who live up north, think of up north. He truly is a statewide figure. And he, yeah, as you mentioned earlier, I'll paraphrase, he's very comfortable being in a little bar up north somewhere in a small little town in rural Nevada, just as he is at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas or at some fundraiser somewhere else in town. He has that ability, I think, too, to make people, or to put people at ease.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, and there's a reason for that. You know, he approaches you as a friend. He's not immediately, you know, pushing a position paper or a rhetorical statement on policy. He approaches as a friend and neighbor. He always has. It's the reason why the bowling alley reference. There's so many of those instances. You know, when he was in the governor's office with his late wife Bonnie Bryan, you know, they went to a place called Hazen, which had a 3-car parade for its Hazen days, and they circled the block. They circle the block for essentially an hour and wave at the same people as they go by every time. And it's wonderful. He went to a graduation, I believe it was in Jackpot, with one graduate. You know, he attended that graduation, high school graduation, and it goes on and on. But also, you know, he also was there in a lot of larger settings, certainly. And, you know, in the Senate years where, you know, it's become a, what would you call it? Almost a crime to have any fun and have a smile and get along with your colleagues. But in the Senate, there were very serious times, the run up to the Iraq War. He talks about, you know, the Clarence Thomas hearings. He talks about the Clinton impeachment, the impeachment effort by the Senate Ethics Committee. It's not quite impeachment, but at any rate, the investigation into Senator Bob Packwood's behavior, senator from Oregon, who was booted from the Senate for that. And that was Bryan and on the Ethics Commission committee. And so you've got all those things working that you kind of juxtapose the small town guy and the regular guy with the really sharp policy man who brings ethics to the table,
you know, and on a national level too.
And on a national level.
Yeah. Yeah. You referenced Bonnie earlier, and I think we need to discuss her because she was so important. She was such an important part of his life. And I'm sure that she shows up in all the pages in some way or another, because they were together for so long and she participated in his career so long.
Yeah, you know, he met Bonnie Fairchild in college at the University of Nevada. At the time, there was no Nevada Las Vegas yet. They courted and married and were definitely a team. You know, there were people who, I'll just say, only liked Dick Bryan. But there was nobody who didn't love Bonnie Bryan. And they were together on the stump, campaigning in, you know, in Las Vegas and in small towns. They were together constantly. And people saw that as a unit. You know, she did her, she had her own kind of magic in politics. This is at a time before, you know, television became the big B-52 bomber of politics, with, you know, dropping big ads constantly. You know, back in at the start and even throughout the middle of his career, you know, small crowds were important, small constituencies, women's clubs, Democratic clubs, and different things like that. They were very important, and she helped rally much of that, especially early in his career. So you have the, you know, Junior League, which now we look at as one thing. It was actually a much bigger entity in terms of its importance for candidates. So you have all of these different things that took place, and Bonnie was there by his side. She was, if anyone who met her, she was so charming, really likable, and really down to earth. There's a great photo on the back of the book where they are in Reno, I believe it's Reno, and they're waving from the back of a convertible. He's in his suit. And Bonnie is in a coat that's warm. This is the kind of dead of winter, and she's there, and they're this happy couple on the stump. In the book's photos, inside the book, they're a couple that you can really see what they were willing to do to get out there among them. You know, and this is what, and they weren't, you know, we would cheapen it by saying they were just hustling votes. They were coming back, even when Brian wasn't running for office. They would come back to town. They would, you know, these events weren't always, you know, were almost not ever during the campaign season. He would go to the parades. He would go to meet the people, go to the football games. You know, he would make appearances, and it was partly, here's a line. Brian liked to say, "Wherever two or more are gathered, that's a place I might need to be." That's the guy. The guy he was a natural politician in the best sense of the word.
No, absolutely. Before I let you go, did he have any regrets, or did he have one specific regret that he wanted to share with you and talk about in the book?
You know, a couple of things that he decided not to do, and it was a conscious decision. He decided not to hit the people who he crossed paths with, who he didn't get along with, and who he might have gotten along with, but who fell by the wayside from their own behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, Floyd Lamb was a good example. He's a brief mention in the book, but the senator, you know, I raised the point. I said, well, Senator, you know, people are going to know, if they know much about Floyd Lamb, they're going to know that he was convicted of you know, corruption and went to prison. And he told me, he said, you know, John, I'll let someone else do that one, because people have feet of clay. You know, what he was at one point, what he became, who knows? But, and he wanted that story. He wanted to tell it at a level that people might appreciate it better. And, you know, that was his decision. You know, you know, there are a couple of other things that he did that I can look back and say, you know, I appreciate what he wanted to do. And one of those was to talk about the women that he, whose efforts he benefited so greatly from, whether it was campaigning or during his administration, people who supported him, many of whom were volunteers, some of whom did not have college degrees. And at a time when women were having a hard time even trying to run for office, the best that many could hope for was to become a person in an administration. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's just the way, that's the way Nevada was. It was the way American life was for the most part. And, you know, he was wise enough to see that and to say, you know, these women were brilliant. They worked harder than anyone. They helped him at every turn. They asked for nothing in return. He put them in his administration. He also made unprecedented appointments of women to things like gaming control and stuff like that, unheard of in previous years. So you have that kind of that moment where you see that there's a lot going on in the story, and it's done with a gentle hand, which is reflective of the guy.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been John L. Smith. He's co-author of My Life in Nevada Politics, the Memoirs of Senator Richard H. Bryan. It's published by the University of Nevada Press. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about John L. Smith, go to johnlsmithwriter.com, johnlsmithwriter.com, and you can follow him on LinkedIn and X. And John, thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you so much, Ira. It's great to see you, and good luck with this.
Thank you. Appreciate it. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Anything you want us to be.